This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
Just a number of things. Now, I can't put them all in order and review them, but we've gone through the history, we've gone through the exam, we've gone through so many of the basics of what needs to be done, the foundational what needs to be done. And now we're going to start moving into a little bit more into treatment. And this topic today, which is stress, and how chronic stress creates and or perpetuates chronic conditions. It's kind of a borderline foundational issue, and it's kind of also a huge functional issue as far as relative to the future talks are going to be, for example, about the large intestines, the small intestines, the stomach, how they all play into each other, the order in which to attack them. And so when a person comes into our office, once we've decided that they're probably a good candidate, we have them fill out an 18-page history, and it has questions on all of those areas. And we have one section of about maybe 12 questions on the intestines, and then we have another area on maybe 5 questions on intestinal permeability. We have 5 pages of questions on the brain and brain chemistry. And brain chemistry, when it goes abnormal, results in anxiety, it results in panic attacks, it results in depression, it results in inflammation, it results in breaking down what's called the blood-brain barrier. The bottom line is all of these different physiological, neurological abnormalities create a lot of problems. I would make the argument that it's at least a ginormous contributor to this expanding group of patients who are the chronic pain patients, the autoimmune patients, and you're gonna understand why I think that by the time we're done with this. So basically, yeah, you have, you know, the brain pretty much controls everything, and I'm not gonna get into, you know, the neurons and all that type of stuff. But the brain pretty much controls everything. It controls your arms, it controls moving, it controls whether you move your finger, it controls your thinking, it controls all that. We're pretty much aware of all that. And we know that if our arm starts not working and we start getting tremors, we start thinking, oh, there's some nerves that's going on. And sometimes those nerves are coming from the brain, and sometimes they're not. But we kind of have a relative grasp of that. But what we see in this office, this I can say with full accuracy, virtually every day, in probably 95% of the new patients that come in here, people who come in here for consultations, people who start care, is that the vast majority of them have a chronic stress response going on. That's separate from the motor nerves that I just got done talking about. Motor nerve is something that allows you to move your hands and move your feet. And that's separate from the thinking part of your brain, okay? The thinking part of your brain is all of these ripples, all these rugae in the what's called the cerebrum, okay? So this is thinking, but we're not talking about those parts of the brain. We're talking about the part of the brain that is the automatic part of the brain, the autonomic part of the brain, which controls your entire physiology without you even thinking about it. The stress response is so important that I don't think that you can get somebody well long term unless you're addressing this response. I don't think you can get a person's irritable bowel syndrome gone long term unless you address the response I'm about to talk about. I don't believe you can get a person's leaky gut better if you don't address this response. And I could go on and on. You're not gonna, this goes kind of back to, for those of you who might be familiar with alternative care, this goes back to the days of, if you can't fix the adrenals, you can't fix anything, but you can't fix the adrenals if you can't fix the stress response. I've done talks online that were titled, I believe the adrenals are the wrong target. So in our world, we talked about doing a complete neurological exam on every chronic pain patient that comes in here, and certainly that's warranted if you have fibromyalgia or peripheral neuropathy, those are nerves. But we do it on somebody comes in here, and if they have chronic fatigue, or if they have irritable bowel syndrome and they don't have fibromyalgia or some neurological problem like MS or something like that, we still do it for this reason. So let's see. I'm looking for a tool here. Here's my tool. Okay, so there's a part of the brain called the brain stem. And for those of you who are students, you might have heard it called the old brain, the lizard brain. It has a number of different names. But technically, it has nothing to do with thinking. It has nothing to do with any of that type of stuff. It does a million things. But what we're particularly interested in this presentation is that fact that it houses something called the autonomic nervous system. You can almost think of it as the automatic nervous system. And what it does is it keeps us balanced, it speeds us up, it slows us down. It controls your saliva, it controls your eyes tearing, it controls your eyes dilating and contracting, it controls everything dilating and contracting, it controls your arteries dilating and contracting, it controls your breathing, it controls your bowel movements. In fact, it controls your sleep. There's a part of it that actually works with a place in your brain called the hippocampus to control your circadian rhythm. You're going to sleep and waking up. Or my patients, I can't go to sleep and I wake up and I can't go back to sleep. And they're now calling this the rest and digest system, because if this system is working properly, you're sleeping well, your bowels are moving well. And so this system is I believe, the key to long-term success in the functional world, in any world. I mean, if you're trying to get yourself better and you're having this type of a stress response, you may be someone who goes to a chiropractor and you can't get better because the adjustments hurt you because your muscles are stiff and they never get soft. Or you may go to the physical therapist or the massage therapist, and they say, oh, your muscles are like knots and it hurts when you get taken care of. Or just a number of things where this stress response is going to prevent you from even getting well with treatment. So what is this stress response? This is the brainstem, and there's three parts to it. The bottom two-thirds, for those of you who are more academic out there, is the pons and the medulla. But the bottom two-thirds basically houses the parasympathetic nervous system. We'll call it the rest and digest relaxation mechanism, okay? And the important thing to understand about this mechanism is that this is kind of where we're supposed to be. The way your brain is set up is it works by stimulation. And we get a lot of sensory input from a lot of things, from walking, from feeling things, from smelling things. And they all feed back to the brain and they stimulate certain parts of the brain. And the brain needs to be stimulated to work right. 95% of stimulation that comes into your brain, okay, and goes up through your thalamus and goes into your brain and all this type of stuff, feeds back to stimulate this part of your brain. Why do I tell you that? Because what I'm trying to show there is that nature knows that we need to be calm all the time. Because if this area of the brain is dominating, if it's strong, if it's working, we're going to be calm. We're going to be sleeping well. Our bowels are going to be working well. In absence of some sort of a pathology, this is going to keep us working well. So calm, believe it or not, is your natural state of being. All right. Now, there are neurons. There's a small pool of neurons here in the upper third of your brain. Okay. And those neurons are the neurons that run your sympathetic nervous system. And I don't know why they call it sympathetic. I do know why they call it sympathetic, but it sounds like it would be sympathetic to you. But it's not very sympathetic, because it makes you go crazy, because when this goes on, it makes us jittery. Now, this is actually a core survival mechanism for us. So what happens is for those of you who are familiar with the fight-flight mechanism, okay, this is the fight-flight mechanism. This is our innate, primitive survival mechanism. The bear's chasing me, the lion's over there, I either got to throw the spear at it or I got to get out of here, one or the other. Okay, so here's how this works. A little bit more of an updated example. Let's say you think like you're going to be walking down the street and you're going to get attacked. Or let's say you simply have to give a speech for the first time, and you've never talked in front of five people in your whole life. Both of those create a response in what's called your frontal lobe, right here, okay? And this, don't fall apart on me, this is your frontal lobe, okay? And so this is your frontal lobe, this is your thinking, this is who you are, this is your personality, this is where your brain goes, there's a problem here, I need energy. That's what the frontal lobe does. The frontal lobe then sends a signal to these guys. They're called the amygdala. Amygdala are the fear center of your brain. Remember that. It's the fear center of your brain. This center also happens to run your whole emotional system. That's important. That's going to be important to us in a few minutes. So this frontal lobe goes, there's danger. Frontal lobe says, we need energy. It tells the amygdala, the fear center of the brain, hey, be fearful because we need energy. And then that tells the little neuron pool here in the upper brain to start making energy right now, the sympathetic nervous system. And here's an important point. This then shuts down the relaxation response. Now, again, a more salient even a point than that is you're either here or you're here, but you're never in both. You might be in the fight flight response and be like a 1 on a scale at 1 to 10, or you might be a 10 on a scale at 1 to 10. But while you're in that flight mechanism, this is pretty much shut down. The relaxation response where we're supposed to be in our normal state of being is shut down. When relaxation responses is dominating, we are feeling pretty darn good, okay? But we need to get out of here right now because the bear is about to eat us. So this shuts down and then it sends a signal down here. This is your spinal cord, and it sends it out to something called your adrenal glands, which are two little kind of cone-shaped little glands that are sitting on top of your kidneys. And then those adrenal glands start vomiting out hormones. You would know them as stress hormones, although they do a lot of other things. They would vomit out adrenaline. So adrenaline starts making your heart pound, right? And so then they start putting out something called epinephrine. So now you start being able to breathe more. Your bronchial tubes now will start to dilate, and you'll actually be able to take more oxygen in. They put out something called aldosterone. Aldosterone works with your kidneys to raise your blood pressure. Why would you want to raise your blood pressure? Because you got to get blood to your big muscles in your chest, your back, your arms, your butt, your thighs, you know, all the big muscles that are going to allow you to fight or flee. It starts moving blood sugar. There's another hormone that the adrenals put out called corticosteroids. So the corticosteroids then start moving blood sugar out of your liver and into your bloodstream. And a lot more things happen than that. But basically, all of that's happening to put sugar into your muscles, sugar into your frontal lobe, electrolytes. It's moving everything into the big muscles so that they can fight or flee. In the meantime, it's draining blood from your intestines. It's telling your bladder shut down. And whether you realize it or not, it actually even shuts down your throat. Because you don't need to be eating, and you don't need to be peeing, and you don't need to be pooping, right, while you're fighting or fleeing. So nature puts you in the optimum position, neurologically and chemically, to be able to fight or flee. And this is where that superhuman strength comes from, where you've heard I haven't heard this one lately, but during my lifetime, it's always been the little old gal who like weighs about 90 pounds who picks the car up off of the kid that the car just rolled on top of. And these things have happened and they've been documented. And then when it's over, the person drops the car and everything goes back to where it should be. And that's what should happen. This just should be a very short-term response. What should happen is once the danger's gone, or once the speech is over, or once the kid's out from under the car, what should happen is this frontal lobe should now say, you know what? Okay, I don't need all that energy anymore because you're gonna be in bad shape if you keep putting all that energy out. And then it tells the fear center to tell something down here called your cerebellum to shut down this midbrain sympathetic fight flight response, and then you go back to rest and relaxation. Okay, that's not the patient that shows up in here. Okay, the patient that shows up in here is continually in some gradient or level of fight flight. And so here's how that happens, okay? So it's the same mechanism. But what happens in the person that has most chronic conditions, again, I'll say 95% of the people that come in here, what happens with them is this fear center gets programmed. So it gets programmed like a computer. It's actually still a survival mechanism. But I just got done saying that it's not a survival mechanism if it goes for more than 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 minutes or a couple of hours or a couple of days, okay? And it's not. So why does it get programmed and why is it a survival mechanism? Well, it's a survival mechanism for the reasons that it gets programmed. And the reasons it gets programmed is usually some form of emotional trauma that that person's brain perceived as egregious. In the women, it's usually, I shouldn't say that anymore because I've had men that have gone through this too. Verbal, physical abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse. I hate to tell you how frequently that comes in. It could be, that your parents were alcoholics, that they left you. It could be, there's a lot of very specific things. I mean, a lady came in here who was standing there where her husband got shot. You know, these are like abnormal, like out of our reality type of things. And they create such massive fear that the brain will produce something called negative neuroplasticity. So neuroplasticity is when your brain changes to help you more in your endeavors. The simplest way to put that, maybe the simplest example I can think of is playing the piano, okay? So playing the piano. So if you're playing chopsticks, dun, 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 you know the rest, okay? So basically, this part of the brain right here, just I'll put my finger right there, is allowing you to do that, okay? Now let's say you get into something a little bit more complex than those two fingers, okay? Let's say you get into something very simple like, just simple old songs like Sinatra songs or Beatles songs or even a simple ballad from today, something where the chords are simple, but it's a little more complex. A larger part of the brain will start to help that original area to be able to move the fingers more in a more complex fashion. That's called neuroplasticity. The neurons, the brain cells, will actually reach out with these little tentacles called dendrites to other neurons to recruit them to help. By the time you're to playing Tchaikovsky, it might be that this whole part of your brain has been recruited to help that. You stop playing for 10 years, it goes back to that. So your brain is plastic. If you ever hear that term, that's what it means. So there's positive neuroplasticity. That's positive neuroplasticity. And there's negative neuroplasticity. And two things I see in this office that are negative neuroplasticity is chronic pain, where the brain has lost its ability to be able to filter out pain, and negative neuroplasticity of this amygdala, which, for starters, creates the situation of the brain not being able to filter out pain, if pain is what you have. So this amygdala, this fear center, now gets from one of those other things. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention is, what else will prime this is, you could be a perfectionist, or you could be like a type A, and because that type of brain's always looking to be right, so everything's got to be right, everything's got to be moved right here, everything's, it's like everything's got to be perfect. So you're continually stimulating this, or type A is just, it's never enough. You always got to do more, you got to do more, you got to do more, you got to do more. All those keep stimulating this part of the brain. And so all of those things will create negative neuroplasticity. Even if you're a type A and you own 12 businesses, and you've just built half of a big city and everything is wonderful, it's not, because usually this is being stimulated and you're in this fight flight response. So what happens is this negative neuroplasticity causes this amygdala to continue that fight flight response where all those hormones are being put out like 24 hours a day. Some like this, some like that, sometimes, but always being put out, high, low, medium. This person who can't go to sleep, they wake up, they can't fall asleep. There's a number of signs that this is going on. Your brain never shuts down. So this is negative neuroplasticity. And what's worse is the latest research shows that as that occurs, this amygdala, this fear center, actually grows. So basically, it's trying to either help you if you're the perfectionist or the type A, but it's trying to protect you from this egregious act of maybe being raped or beaten or shot or alcoholic parents are abandoned. So it's keeping you aware all the time. Okay, so that's the mechanism. But here's why I'm going through all of this. And here's why I said this is kind of foundational to getting better, but it's also something that creates problems. It certainly perpetuates problems, and here's why. these adrenal glands that are putting out, you can't see me down here, but these adrenal glands I'm pointing to on top of my kidney, these adrenal glands keep putting out stress hormones because the brain keeps telling them to keep this relaxation response shut down and keep putting out adrenals hormones. And so so intermittently, you keep putting out things that are altering your blood sugar, things that are causing stress hormones, things that are making. There's one particular hormone that is extremely destructive.
If you're enjoying this, then you know, please don't miss next week. Next week is kind of a big deal in most people's journey to wellness. So, okay, that's it for this week. Thank you for watching again, and take care.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.